Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, February the 16th. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Obviously, a lot about 2020, a lot about President Trump, a lot about Ambassador Grinnell in Germany, who is, making quite a name for himself. And then, of course, some of the other stories, like the possibility of Bloomberg and Hillary Clinton joining forces. So all of this on the plate tonight for our friend Bill Katz. Bill, give me a weather report. We always like to hear the weather in New York before we get started.
Well, I had one of my rare days when I went outside, because you don't want to do that too much in New York. But it was actually really reasonably pleasant. It's been a little rainy, but I think they expect a decent week in New York. And one of the there is actually, I think, a bit of rejoicing, because Mayor de Blasio of New York City has endorsed Bernie Sanders, and not only has he endorsed him, but he has said he's going to go out to Nevada to campaign for him, which means that de Blasio won't be in New York. And people in New York are celebrating, I don't think in the streets yet, but I think that this guy is going to be gone because he's one of the worst mayors we've ever had.
Yes, well, I keep up with, I try to keep up with New York sports. A lot of my Yankee friends in New York are pretty angry about the scandal, you know, the stealing signs scandal.
Yes.
And they're pretty angry with the Houston Astros. So I know that's consuming a lot of talk there. Of course, that's the Yankees, and you're a Dodgers fan, so I know that's not something that you follow a great deal. But a lot of stuff going on in the news, Bill. And I, just as a general thought, I wanted to put something on the table, and then we'll talk about President Trump. But have you ever seen a presidency like this? Because I have not, where it seems like every minute of every week there's something going on. I mean, there's never a day or a couple of days or a weekend when we can say, okay, let's everybody go home and relax. It's like every single day, Saturday, Sunday, holidays, it never stops, Bill. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Well, it's you know what is, and it's amazing, is that so much of what is not stopping is so unimportant. You know, I mean, it seems to be a flurry of press releases, public statements, threats of another impeachment, which are almost hilarious. And I have to tell you that I search each day when I do Urgent Agenda for some really important news stories that really, you know, that can have an effect on the world, and it's getting harder and harder to find them. It looks as if we're basically going through a novel of some kind, you know, Gone with the Wind and the Rain and the Sun and everything, but very little really important news. I mean, I'm sure that each week in this country and in other countries, there are major medical advances. You don't read about them. People don't talk about them anymore. It's like a big gossip column. What did Trump do today? What did he say today? Mm-hmm. What did the Democrats do to embarrass themselves today? And I think that the level of our politics is very, very low right now. And I think it's been low for a while. And I don't think it's getting better, because the young people in school are not being taught real American history, mm-hmm. and they don't know enough to demand better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I also think people, just from my assessment and talking to people, a lot of people have tuned it out, Bill. I think a lot of people have tuned it out completely for the reasons you said. I mean, so much of it just seems to be just trivial stuff. You know, it's just the same thing over and over again, and not much that really impacts people. I mean, as long as the economy is in good shape and your family is in good health, I think people just tune out what's happening in Washington. But I wanted to begin with a couple of examples of what I regard as the excellent Trump that we would like to see the rest of the election year, and then the bad Trump that we don't want to see too much of because it could cost him the reelection. The good Trump is what we saw at the race.
Daytona,
I can't think of the name right.
Daytona
500. That's fantastic Trump. You know, that's the same thing Reagan and Bush did when they ran for reelection, you know, bringing down Air Force One and going around. I mean, that's perfect. That's great stuff for him to do. The bad stuff is tweeting when he doesn't have to. I mean, why in the world would he even tweet about Roger Stone? I mean, it's just like it's completely unnecessary, but he does it, Bill, and that worries me.
Well, it worries me, too, because, as we have said, a couple of weeks ago, he had one of the best weeks any modern president has had. I mean, commentators were just amazed at what happened day after day on that particular week. That was the week he was acquitted. It was the week of his State of the Union message. There were other things day by day that just built up Donald Trump as a very formidable president. And usually in a situation like that, you know, Churchill would say, in victory, magnanimity. Reach out to people, show graciousness, be a little modest. Instead, he started in, again with these attacks on people, vicious attacks, referring. He gives nicknames to people instead of acting gracious. And this is why so many people say, and we've heard it repeatedly, that the Democrats can't win the election in November, but Trump can lose it. And I'm beginning to fear that this is exactly what could easily happen, because remember, the press is going to pick up every one of his mistakes and minimize every one of his accomplishments.
I agree completely. Now, the one thing he's got going for him, as you said, is the Democrats. And on this tweet, I completely agree that the tweet was unnecessary. He didn't have to get involved in that. Let the Attorney General deal with it. I have total confidence in the Attorney General. But what happens, Bill, is that, and I don't know if Trump does this on purpose or not, but the reaction from the other side is usually hysterical. You know, a threat to our democracy. He's a dictator. I mean, they go off on crap like that, and I think they lose a lot of people who might be open to maybe accepting the fact that President Trump should not have tweeted. I mean, a lot of people like me, you know, I look at that reaction and I go, come on, guys, a threat to our democracy? Give me a break. That's the thing, Bill, that the Democrats seem to always take it to the next level of absurdity, Bill.
Well, that's the point, and that is that we have a rather unique situation in the country today politically, and that is we have both the president and the Democratic opposition who are experts at self-destruction. And usually you get one who's an expert at self-destruction, but here we have both sides. I mean, you have the president. We just talked about what he does and the fear that he's going to do something, you know, or say something, not necessarily do something, but say something really nutty. I also have a fear that right before the election, two or three days before, a paper like the New York Times will come out with a scandalous story about Trump that may not even be true, but could destroy him. And on the other hand, you have, on the Democratic side, a party that doesn't really stand for anything, but when the chips are down, is going further and further and further to the left. They're being helped, of course, by some elements in American life and in the American press who are also on the left, even though they won't say it. They'll say we're pragmatists or something. They're being helped by Barack Obama, whose silence is absolutely amazing in this mess, because he's still the titular head of the Democratic Party, the last elected president. And they may very well nominate for president a man who with a history of intense dislike for his own country, and that's Bernie Sanders. A man who is a Marxist, who has participated in hard left affairs, and this is after that very same party spent 3 years investigating Russian collusion. I mean, there's just no consistency, no consistent principle there. There really aren't any principles there. And you'd think that with all the opportunity they have, all the time they have had to build candidates, what complete failures they've been.
I agree. I mean, they seem to have a group of people, and we'll talk about them in more detail. But I'll go back to, I think, what I've said before on the show, Bill, that the only person at this point who can defeat President Trump is President Trump. I was listening to Bill O'Reilly the other day. O'Reilly knows him very well, as I understand. They were kind of buddies in New York for a while, and they used to go to Yankee Stadium together. And apparently O'Reilly talks to him off the record quite a bit. And O'Reilly the other day was saying that, you know, Trump needs to stop all the tweeting. He needs mm-hmm. to just basically stop getting into fights with everybody. Just, you know, you're the president of the United States. What do you really care what Don Lemon at CNN
yes.
says? Nobody
That's
watches
right.
Don Lemon.
Of course
so why
not.
Get into
now,
a fight with Don Lemon?
But if you get into a fight with Don Lemon, you're giving Don Lemon an awful lot of publicity. And then people will start watching, and that's bad for Trump. I don't know why he does it. He's just a naturally combative individual. And I think...
Well, that's what O'Reilly was saying, that it's in his personality, confrontation.
Yes. Yes. And the fact of the matter is that people can tire of that. And the both sides are going to really go at each other big time in November. It's going to be a very vicious campaign. And he's got to be an asset to his own side. And very frankly,
mm-hmm.
when he starts in with these things, he is not an asset to his campaign. And he could absolutely ruin it and lose the Senate. He can lose the House. It could be a disaster. On the other hand, if he does things well as we know Don Trump can do, he can sweep all those institutions. I think there's a good chance, if things go well for us, and if he behaves himself, that not only will the president be reelected, but that the Republicans will control the Senate as they do now and may even take back control of the House. That would be wonderful. That would be
absolutely
wonderful.
And I think that's very doable because of lots of things. I mean, we saw in New Hampshire, Bill, as well as Iowa, you know, the turnout for the GOP, considering that there was no contest.
Yes.
I mean, President Trump didn't have any opposition. He got like 99% of the vote or whatever. But the turnout was unbelievable.
It really was. And that's Iowa, which is not a hard right state.
No, and New Hampshire, the turnout was also very good. And I mentioned to you before that we had a special election here in the Houston area, an election that the Democrats targeted a great deal with lots and lots of money. They thought they were going to basically do a 2018, you know, repeat with lots
yes.
and lots of money, lots and lots of registration, but the Republican won by 18 points.
Wow.
So that's incredible. And that's all turnout. That's all that is. So there's great excitement. And I just think that when he tweets like this, I just think he's wasting his time. And you and I are talking about tweets rather than talking about the Democrats, Bill.
That's exactly right. And when he does that, he gives aid and comfort to those in journalism who never want to talk about his accomplishments. And it gives them a chance to say, well, there may have been some, but look at the other side of him. Let's talk about that. I mean, why give your opponent an even chance in an election? I can't understand it.
Well, it's like the baseball analogy, you know. Why walk the pitcher when he comes to the plate? You know, that's an automatic out. So just, you know, throw him three strikes. Don't get cute and end up walking the pitcher or giving him anything to hit. You know, to hit. Just
yes.
you know, go for. You know, don't put runners on base. I mean, I'm using baseball analogies. You know, but whatever sport it may be, don't give your opponent or what was that famous Little League coaches always tell their kids. Don't give him any more than three outs.
Well, that's it. And there's an old saying also in baseball, don't take points off the board. Actually, it's from
that's
football.
Right. That's right.
In other words,
that's
if
right.
you're already winning and you have a choice, you know, in a penalty situation, don't take any points you have off the board.
That's right.
If you think you can get more tomorrow. You don't give up advantages.
Exactly. I was watching him at Daytona. I was watching a replay of that. And here he is, presidential Trump, talking about God and family and saluting men and women in the military. I mean, he was fabulous. I'm saying that's the Trump we need to see every single day, and forget about Don Lemon, forget about Friedel,
right.
whatever he calls him over at CNN. Nobody's watching that. you know, nobody watches that stuff. So why give it publicity, Bill?
Well, that is, as O'Reilly said, it's in his personality. He has to do it. I mean, and what's interesting is that the people around him, his family members, are not that way at all. They conduct themselves very quietly and modestly. I mean, I think I was with you last week after hearing Lara Trump at an organization here in New York, and she was wonderful. She was charming, and of course Ivanka can charm anybody. The boys conduct themselves very well, even when they're on television campaigning. But then they have their father, and that you get into this constant attacking of people far beyond what is necessary. You don't have to kill somebody twice. You know, once is enough.
Right. And, well, especially people who are not doing a very good job of living.
Well, that's the point, and that's exactly the point. And he is just giving aid and comfort to a political party that is in the process of destroying itself. I was watching a few minutes ago, well, about an hour ago or so, on Fox, they had Pete Buttigieg, and I was thinking, my God, we might elect this president of the United States, the mayor of a small town who's never done anything else.
Right.
I mean, you remember what the standards were when I was growing up? I mean, people questioned John F. Kennedy's qualifications to be president in 1960, and he had a resume that went on and on. This guy's resume is one paragraph, and we're taking
That's
him
right.
seriously. So,
no, I know. It's remarkable.
Yeah. And everything in the Democratic Party is race, 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 gender, 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 nothing else. They don't even mention foreign policy. It's as if it doesn't even exist. I mean, it is really basically a knockdown, drag-out fight, and we don't even know fully what these people stand for.
Right. No, exactly. I think it's remarkable to me that that's all we hear. A couple of quick stories I wanted to get to before we get back to the politics. You mentioned in one of your posts, I thought it was very interesting, you were talking about Ambassador Grenell in Germany and what a good job he is doing. Maybe expand on that, Bill. Tell us why you wrote that.
Well, Ambassador Rick Grenell is probably our best ambassador. He is certainly a favorite of mine. He is a kind of male version of Nikki Haley in the sense that he stands up for his country. He stands up for his president. He understands what some ambassadors do not understand, that you represent only the United States of America. You don't represent the world. You're not there to explain away the defects of the country you're assigned to. You know, there was that very famous incident that occurred during the Reagan administration when George Shultz was the Secretary of State, and he would welcome into his office newly appointed and newly confirmed ambassadors to congratulate them, and then he would take them over to a map, and he would say, well, Mr. Ambassador, where's your country? And inevitably, the ambassador designate would go up to the big world map and point to the country that he was assigned to in Africa or in Asia, and Shultz would then go up to the map himself and say, no, that's not your country. And then he would point to the United States and say, that's your country. And he was reminding them they represented the United States and only the United States. That's something that Rick Grenell understands. He has taken on a hard assignment. The Europeans like to balk at the United States, and Germany has gotten very Germanic in the last couple of years, and he lays down the law to them. Of course, he's diplomatic about it, but he says these are the things you must do to be an ally of the United States. Now, he also, by the way, and I didn't think this was necessarily the best thing to do, but I can understand it, he defended the president's tweets. He said, I'm glad to know I have somebody who will stand up for what he believes. Okay, that's a valid point, too. But he is a very unusual United States ambassador. He is, by the way, also openly gay, and nobody has said a word about it. I had hoped that Trump would make him ambassador to the UN, but I think the thinking was he's too valuable in Germany. But he's a guy who understands that the United States ambassador represents the United States and the interests of the United States, and for that I applaud him.
Right. No, I think you're right. He's making quite a name for himself. I can potentially see a future Secretary of State here. You know,
yes.
sometime in the future. You know, either a Mike Pence administration or something like that. This is really a good man, Ambassador Grenell. The other story that has hit the news here in the last 24 or 48 hours is these girls in Connecticut who are suing. I'm not sure exactly who they're suing, maybe the school district, but they're suing them over boys who think they're girls who are playing with the girls. And this is a real controversial issue with parents across the country. Some state legislatures are even going as far as, you know, passing laws restricting this, that you can only play in the team of your biological birth or whatever the right word is. And I'm happy to see that. I'm happy to see that. I'm hoping that the feminists will stand up behind these girls and actually defend girls for a change, Bill.
They haven't. The feminist movement is a joke. The feminist movement is only a little bit about women. It has always been a left-wing movement. It's always been more interested in Marxism than in women. And they have not defended these women at all. The story here is an interesting one. I think they're suing the state of Connecticut or some division within the state of Connecticut that has made it possible to have these athletic contests where men with men's bodies who identify as women or say they identify as women can run in women's sports. Well, the problem, of course, with that immediately is that they're not women. They may be trans people, but they're not women. And these are women's sports. And if you have the body of a man, no matter how you self-identify or say that you feel today, you have the body of a man, which means considerably more strength and endurance than a woman. That's one of the reasons we have women's sports, because they're different. And the record here has been that a couple of years ago, I believe, two trans athletes with the bodies of men and the strength of men became eligible under this law to run in these women's events. And they have won, I think, virtually all of them. And one of the young women was saying, and I think she's absolutely right in saying it, she said, why bother even showing up? It's not women's sports anymore. It's sports against people with which have now included people with men's bodies who claim they identify as women, running against women and, of course, mm-hmm. beating them regularly because of their superior strength. Now, fortunately, many of these women are now striking back with a lawsuit. I don't know where the lawsuit will go or how it will be decided. You can be sure mm-hmm. that the people who introduced this crazy process, which is ruining women's sports, will try to find some Obama-appointed judge, probably out in the Virgin Islands or even on Mars, who will decide in their favor. And, of course, you have the fashionable lefty organizations backing the participation of these men in these women's contests. It's absolutely awful and defies all common sense. Hello?
No, I'm sorry. I hit the wrong button. I'll just say a couple of things about it. Not long ago, a couple of months ago, just to illustrate your point, the number one athlete, female athlete in a school district in Colorado was a young man who thinks he's a girl. I mean, that's a disgrace. And this young man won all kinds of awards and titles defeating – he was a boy defeating girls. I mean, it's
that's
insane.
Right.
And,
yes.
But if the Republicans play this correctly and President Trump plays this – this is a big issue in the suburbs with fathers and mothers who have kids, who have daughters in school. And the Democrat Party, as you know, in some of these debates, has really gone nutty on this issue, you know, talking about transgenders and all that. And I don't care if the transgenders – I mean, I'm willing to give them their own tournament if that's what they want. I mean, if boys who think they are girls want to compete with other boys who think they're girls, I'm okay with that if they can get – you know, if they can do it. I don't care. But girls, girls, boys, boys. And
yes.
And this could be a big political issue for President Trump, because a lot of Democrats have gone too far with this issue in their primary bill.
Well, not only have they gone too far with that issue, they've gone much too far with late-term abortion. I mean, that is a thing that is unbelievably unpopular in the United States, and here is Pete Buttigieg completely endorsing it. And I don't know how anyone with a heart can do it. I really don't. The Republicans have great issues in this campaign. They have great accomplishments in this campaign, but they've got a president who runs his mouth. And if they can bring him under some control, I think that it's possible we could win a major victory. Because
right.
despite the fact that the press will be completely in the Democrats' corner,
right.
I still think we can do it if Trump can become the great campaigner, the great rabble-rouser that he really is, and can stay away from the petty stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, if he can be the Trump that we saw at the race today, I keep forgetting the name of the race. The Daytona. I keep forgetting that. If he can be that Trump, if he can be the Trump that we saw at the State of the Union, hey, that's a Trump that can win a lot of elections.
That's
man,
right.
When he gets into fights with Don Lemon over at CNN, or as he likes to call him, Friedel, or he's calling Mike Bloomberg Mini Mike. Sorry, that it just doesn't do anything for me, Bill. That just doesn't
that's
do
right.
it. I don't like. It just doesn't do anything for me. I think it hurts it's, him.
It
I really think it hurts
the
president.
It demeans the presidency.
Absolutely,
and
I don't know why he keeps on doing it, but I guess that comes with the territory with President Trump, Bill.
I'm afraid it does, and you know, we're in a way we're used to it because we had it before, but the fact is, and most Americans really do kind of put it aside when they're voting or deciding what's best for their family, but why does he keep reminding us of it? You know, it would be,
right.
I mean, you know, it would be Bill Clinton reminding us of his record with women by whistling at girls from the White House. You know, it would be something the equivalent of that.
That's right. But I find interesting, Bill, and then, I just wanted to say something and then we'll take a break, but I've often tried to compare this election, potentially 2020, could be a lot like 1972. In 1972,
yes.
You had President Nixon, who was not exactly loved. He was not a popular man. He was the guy who, well, we know, just not a popular guy. But yet he won a major election because he was presidential in 1972, and obviously the Democrats nominated McGovern. If President Trump would just look at that election more and see the kind of electoral potential that he has, I remember early 72, that was an election that I got really into, probably the first one that I really got into. At this time in 1972, President Nixon was going to go to China. I don't remember him, or I don't remember any evidence at this point in 1972 that he would go on and win 49 states. And yet he did,
right.
because
yes.
the Democrats nominated exactly the kind of guy who couldn't win or who could be defeated in 49 states, and the Democrats could be doing that with Bernie Sanders, so just leave him alone. Don't just let him self-destruct.
Yes, because if you look at what Sanders says, some of the comments are crazy. We need a political revolution. You're not going to get the news media to keep reporting those things. They know how they will operate with Sanders, exactly the way they operated with Obama. Just ignore things and present only the good side of him, because that's the business they're now in. They're not in the journalism business anymore, and it is going to be up to our side to run those tapes of Bernie Sanders with his love of Marxism, his dislike for his own country, and I think we can win a huge victory.
I agree. I agree with you. I agree totally with you. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll come back with Bill, and we've got a lot more to get into, especially about the Democrats. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just a quick reminder that we play the music of my friend Carlos Geddes, and we have a link to his website as well as his schedule on the show information. Click on that. And let's get back to Bill. Bill, we were talking about Bernie Sanders, and obviously he's a socialist. I would even argue at times you could even call him a communist, because some of the things he's never met a left-wing dictator in Latin America that he didn't like. And that to me is a communist. I don't know what else to call him. But the Washington Post had a very interesting editorial or column recently where they're basically saying that there are no moderates in this campaign. And if you look at some of these people, whether it's Pete, Mayor Pete, or the senator from Minnesota, or whoever, if you look at their voting record, it's not that different than Bernie Sanders. So there aren't, these are not really moderates. The press keeps calling Mayor Pete a moderate. He's not a moderate.
No, he's not.
He's a real liberal guy.
Yes, his father was an active leftist. That's something we haven't read about, but I did read about it in one source. No, he's not moderate at all. And he is now beginning to use the language of the left, which is endless references to endemic racism, bigotry, misogyny. I mean, now these things are all serious subjects when handled seriously, but they've become
mm-hmm.
just talking points. And I think that I have concern about him because he's a very attractive guy.
Mm-hmm.
He is, an openly gay man. That doesn't bother me. I don't care what he is, but
yeah.
But he's a very, very attractive person. Speaks beautifully. Kind of a young, in certain respects, a young Adlai Stevenson, which is not necessarily a compliment. But people are very taken with people who speak well, and the perfect example, of course, is Obama. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Obama came to office basically on the idea that he was this eloquent young man. We haven't had anything like it, first black president. And I fear Buttigieg, especially with the support of the press, which he will certainly get, can do the same thing. And you're talking about a man who has virtually no qualifications to be president except for the basic constitutional ones. I don't think one term as the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, means much in a world where we're dealing with nations that have a billion people and have nuclear weapons.
That's right, and even his popularity, as I understand, in that city is not the greatest.
No, it isn't.
But I don't personally care either about the gay stuff. I mean, as you were mentioning, Ambassador Grinnell is
yes.
openly gay, and nobody. You know, I don't care about that. He's doing a great job. But what bothers me about Mayor Pete is that normally, and maybe this is unfair on my part, but normally when a candidate wins or gives a speech at one of these primaries or caucuses, you see the spouse with him. And I didn't see that with Mayor Pete in New Hampshire. He talked about the love of his life, but the love of his life was nowhere to be seen. And I wonder if that's not a little hypocritical on his part, because this Congressman Clyburn from South Carolina said that, you know, homosexuality could be a problem in the black community.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
I know it's a big problem in the Hispanic community. And
yes.
I'm wondering if he wants to have it both ways, in the sense that he wants people to know, yes, I have a husband, but never really show us the husband in public, Bill.
I don't know what's going on in his mind, but yes. I find it very interesting, though, when he is interviewed on the subject of his gay designation, that people will ask, well, how will this play with evangelicals whose votes you want to get? But nobody will ever talk about the groups in the Democratic Party who are skeptical of gays. And you mentioned the African-Americans, some Hispanics. I mean, this is not something that is pleasant to talk about, because I'm opposed to all discrimination and all bigotry, but the reality is that it is a form of behavior, and there are certain people, especially people with strong religious views, who object to it. It's got to be a calculation at some point as to whether this will lose him votes, whether this will gain him votes, whether it'll be neutral. But he is going to make matters worse for himself unless he begins to speak as a president and speak in presidential terms rather than somebody running for a student government.
Right. Well, I don't care about his personal life, but it seems to me that the people who are talking about his gay marriage are not Republicans. The people who are talking about it are Clyburn, Representative Clyburn of South Carolina, prominent African-American in the Congress. I know there's a lot of Hispanic ministers who are talking about it. So,
yeah.
I mean, this is not coming from, you know, the Republicans, it's coming from his side of the fence, people asking the question about, you know, his moral and so on. I mean, I have a lot more problems with him than that, but I find it that he always gets on the high horse when he's talking about the love of his life, but I don't see him, you know, giving him a big kiss in front on TV like you see with other candidates, Bill.
Well, you know, we did have the kiss felt around the world back in the 2000 Democratic Convention.
Yes.
When Al Gore planted a huge kiss on his wife, Tipper Gore, presumably to emphasize the family values in contrast to Clinton and his not-so-family values.
Right,
and there
yeah.
was a concern that year that the Democrats were losing the family vote because of Clinton's promiscuity in the White House. And this was supposed to be an answer, that Gore would come out to accept the nomination and Tipper would be with him, and that would be it. They would give this huge kiss, and that would be the signal that they are going to be different. Now, later, of course, they were divorced. I don't even know where Tipper Gore is today.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either. But I also remember hearing something that, and again, I'm dealing from my memory here, that Al Gore had been told by some people on his staff, and he needed to be more alpha male, because
yes.
he was running against George W., who was, you know, alpha male type character.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing something about that as well. But, you know, that's just speculation on my part. But my point, though, a much more important point, is that this is not a group of people who are very moderate at all, at least not in their voting record. And you mentioned the senator from Minnesota. And she's a real liberal person, and she ran into a little bit of a problem this week with her vote, or I guess something she said about English being the official language. And back in 2000, she said yes. Now she's backing down. Or back in 2007, she said yes, and now she's backing down. I find that appalling. Why do these people always have to, like, take back everything they did, whether it's the senator from Minnesota or the former mayor from New York, Bill?
Well, these are opportunists, and she particularly disappointed me because she was beginning to emerge as the moderate alternative. She is a bit more moderate than the others. I mean, she is a liberal, but she's a traditional liberal. We'll give her that. And we thought that maybe this was the one who could do it and get the party away from Bernie Sanders. I recall that when she did so well, it was in the New Hampshire primary. The word Amy was everywhere. Well, can Amy do it? Does Amy have enough time? And then she comes out and makes this foolish statement, reversing the stand she's had for many years on English as a national language. She has believed up to now, or at least she said, that yes, I believe English should be the official language of the United States. And then she just completely on one day reversed herself, obviously to appeal to the large Hispanic vote in Nevada. And it just made her into another politician. In just a few seconds,
right.
She was transformed into another typical politician.
Well, and you and I were talking about this, before the show off the air. But I don't think that this is. I mean, I don't see a lot of Hispanics angry that somebody makes or talks about English being the official language in the country. I mean, for most Hispanics, it's obvious that English is the official language. That's why they try to learn it, to become more productive and get better jobs. I think they all know that.
Yes.
And for Democrats to pander with them about this, I mean, it may appeal to some leftist Democrats, but I think the larger population looks at this and says, well, what are you talking about? Of course it's the official language. It may not be officially the official language, but everybody knows you have to learn English if you're going to survive, Bill.
That's right. And that's the point. You wonder, before she made that statement reversing all these years of supporting English as the national language, you wonder who she spoke to. Who gave her advice? Who gave her that advice? And how familiar was that person with the Hispanic community? Because you and I have talked about this, and you've made the point that Hispanics naturally want to become part of the United States. And
right.
They didn't immigrate here to be part of another country. They came to be Americans. And the people who argue against English as the national language tend to be these left-wing ideologues, as you pointed out, who believe that each culture should have its own designation, its own power, maybe even its own landscape, but that there should be no such thing as an American. But I don't think that most Hispanics believe that, and I think she may have made a big mistake.
Well, I'll give you an example of. I was thinking about this while you were talking just a minute ago. Univision is up for sale. Now, there's reasons. That's a whole different topic. I don't want to get into. We don't have time today to get into it. But one of the reasons that they're putting it for sale is that their audience, you know, initially it's people who speak Spanish, of course. But then when the children of those audiences grow up, they start watching English. So,
yes.
You know, the young people, once they get here, once they go to school or whatever, they're watching television in English. They're not watching Univision anymore because Univision, you know, that's like their parents' network, not for them. And that's a problem, that their audience is shrinking because they just simply cannot get, you know, they don't have the same flow of people coming from Spanish-speaking countries watching them. Now, there's other reasons that they have problems, but that's one of them, that they're, as children get older, they want to watch English TV. And I think that confirms what I'm saying about the fact that most Hispanics understand that they have to learn English, Bill.
Yes, absolutely. And also, remember, they know they're going into an English-speaking world. If they're going into a high school, it is certainly true that there are, especially in California, some high schools that are predominantly Hispanic, but many are not. There's a Hispanic population. They want to get along with the other kids. And that's one way to do it. The best way to do it is to speak their language. So this whole business of, in a way, almost discouraging people from learning English or applauding those who want to keep a group apart through language, this whole business really is not good for the children. It's not good for the country. It's not good for anyone except the people leading these cultural groups. And very often they really do not represent the people they claim to represent.
I agree. I agree 100% with you on that. And you know, I can see that all around. You know, you see the young people, they're watching English TV. They're not watching Univision. And that's a real problem for them. That's why they're going to be sold and probably restructured substantially. Bill, let's talk about some of these other candidates. Vice President Biden, I hate to say that he's off the table, but he's not doing very well. I would not be surprised if he's out after Nevada, Bill.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me either, because it isn't that others are winning, it's that he's losing. You listen to him and you ask the question, does this man have the stamina and the vigor, as President Kennedy used to say, the vigor to be President of the United States? He doesn't look that old, but he sounds that old. He is in his late 70s. That really isn't old by today's standards, but he sounds old and he sounds tired. He sounds like he's been through it so many times that he's doing it all by rote. And I think that that is what's killing him, the belief that you really do not want to entrust the United States to 4 years of this. And it's very sad.
It is, and it's almost like he's saying, vote for me, and I promise I'm only going to serve one term. Well,
oh, yes.
I don't think that's a very smart strategy. But another thing, another example of what we were talking about with Senator Amy Klobuchar was Vice President Biden. He was being interviewed by Jorge Ramos this week, and Jorge Ramos was asking him about the Obama administration detaining, you know, kids or keeping kids in South Texas and separating families. And initially, Biden said, "No, we didn't do that." And then, of course, Jorge Ramos showed him pictures. And then he said, "Yeah, but we were protecting those kids because they were by themselves." I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous answer.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump could argue the same thing.
He doesn't seem terribly enthusiastic about being president. He doesn't seem terribly enthusiastic about running. He doesn't seem to like people. He's gotten into some snippish fights with ordinary voters, which did not do him any good. And the fact is, he has run for president a number of times with absolutely no success. Now, he is said to be a very nice guy. That I accept. I think he does have a feeling for ordinary people. That I accept. But he also has been a man whose family has clearly enriched itself by quite a bit because of who he is, and he doesn't seem to be bothered by that or believe that it will be an issue. It will be a very big issue. It will be a big issue, especially with Trump, because if they can paint him as a financial manipulator, it diminishes those charges against Trump. In other words, in effect saying, either way, you're going to have a guy who rigs the numbers. And I'm afraid that may be the case. I don't think he's going to be the nominee. I don't know who will be the nominee. We have Super Tuesday coming up on March 3rd. And also we have the huge Florida primary coming up, and that is a really big primary. That is the largest state that is in contention this year. It's Florida. There are larger states, of course. I think Florida is the fourth largest in population, but it is the largest that is in contention. The other states are basically Democratic states. And so the Florida primary will be extraordinarily important psychologically. And the person leading the polls right now is Bloomberg. Now, Bloomberg has also got his own set of problems, and that is the statements he's made in the past and his reputation as something of a womanizer, although that hasn't hurt either Bill Clinton or Donald Trump. So I don't know. And at his age, I mean, how much womanizing can he do? You know, it's there will be women who will come forward and say that he maintained organizations where there was a hostile work environment. That may be true. I don't know how much effect it will have. You know, these charges have been made so often, and they haven't seemed to have stuck. But and I think some of his answers have been foolish. But the fact of the matter is that Bloomberg, when he's at his best, he's never exciting. He's not a man who is going to get you off to go to war and, you know, run, and marching to the drums. But he is a man who has a certain calm about him and a certain aura of competence. And that may very well serve as an advantage. You know, somebody once said that it was Marshall McLuhan who said that television was a cool medium, that you have to stay cool on television, and he has that ability. He has that ability to speak to an audience and remain very calm. And it is, in a way, very ingratiating.
Right. Well, he's almost like the anti-Trump.
Exactly.
In so many ways.
That's
in his personality, that is. Yeah, he'll be the anti-Trump, said, I'm not going to tweet. That's kind of like the way he'll run. But there is there is talk, Bill. But before I ask you about Bloomberg Clinton, I want to ask you about the statements that Mr. Bloomberg made about crime in New York a few years ago, the controversial statements now. I was under the impression from listening to you over the years and reading Urgent Agenda that those policies actually worked extremely well in New York. They reduced crime. They made the city safer. And that most people in New York understand that.
Well,
and now, of course, he has to apologize because he's pandering to the left. But why not just say, yes, I did it and the policies worked, and here are the numbers that prove it? I mean, I think that would impress independents a heck of a lot more than pandering to the left, Bill.
I agree, and I think that's exactly what he should have done. He said, look, I may have expressed things not badly at times, but look at the actual record. And he can say, you know, people say Black Lives Matter. Well, our administration was run on the basis that Black Lives mattered, and we saved an awful lot of black lives. I suspect he has that in mind, or somebody has that in mind, because so far he's run a very good campaign. But they're going to get him on the Central Park 5 case. That's coming next, because that was that big case in New York, remember, of the Central Park jogger?
Yes.
Where they put five
yes.
guys in jail, and the party line on the left is that they were actually innocent, and they were later, the city later settled with them. But that's coming next. They're going to get him on that. They're going to get him on the idea that he's a billionaire, I mean, we don't do that in the Democratic Party. But also, there's something about the Democratic Party, I'm talking now about the left-wing element in the Democratic Party, that says to the country, we're suspicious of anybody who succeeds. And it's true, they are. They believe that any success must be illegitimate, just as they believe that any election that elects their opponent is illegitimate. You know how often we've heard that word from them? This isn't a legitimate election. This isn't a legitimate president. They believe democracy exists when their side wins. And, that is their attitude. And so, you know, I wish, as you do, that he would stop pandering to the left, because anyone who's ever tried to pander to the left knows they can't be pandered to. The left is not a set of political beliefs. The left is a religion. And you must believe in the entire dogma. You must accept everything they say.
Right.
No dissent allowed. So if he tries to pander to the left, they'll just pick up some other issue to hit him with.
Right, exactly. Now, of course, the latest topic for tonight is Bloomberg, Clinton. I mean, I know they're both a pair of opportunists, and they'll do whatever it takes to win. But I don't think the Bernie Sanders people are going to go for that. And if they screw Bernie Sanders again, or his supporters feel like they were cheated, those guys, I pity the Democrat who has to run without the Bernie Sanders support bill.
Well, that's true, and of course, you know, no matter what happens, again, their definition of an honest convention will be one where their candidate wins. If their candidate does not win, Bernie Sanders, they will claim fraud, even if there wasn't any fraud, because they are leftists, and that is the game the left plays. The left plays the game that, well, yes, you can give us this, we're asking for this, and as soon as you give them that, they come back the next day and say, it's not enough, and then it's not enough, and it's never enough. I mean, they eat their own, they devour their own. You can be on the left and not be sufficiently leftist, and they will devour you. These are professional revolutionaries who are in a country that doesn't want a revolution.
That's exactly right, and let's just hope that the message from President Trump and the Republicans is all about the economy and family and that kind of thing, because I think this may be the year that a message like that could win a very big election, because the Democrats have gone so far to the left that I don't even recognize them anymore, Bill. I mean, to me, Democrats were – I mean, even Bill Clinton was a pretty moderate guy and a centrist in many ways. He governed really from the center. I think that contributed to many of the things that he did. He may have been a liberal, but he understood that he had to govern from the center. I don't, you know, these people, I don't recognize them at all. That's not the Democrat Party that I remember, Bill.
That's right. And you know, any good political figure, and any good political figure, especially who has held an executive office, knows that compromise is the art of government. We used to say government is the art of compromise, but compromise is also the art of government. And that is, Ronald Reagan said it best when he said, if I have 80% of what I want, I have a very good deal. But they
right.
don't believe that. They believe you must give them 100%. And then there'll be and then when you give them the 100%, they want another 100%. I mean, that is what happens when political movements take on the characteristics of religions, and that is what happened on the political left.
Right, exactly. And that also leads to their own destruction, because they end up killing each other. Well, Bill, thank you for... Go ahead. I'm sorry. You were going to say?
No, I said there's the old saying, a revolution eats its own.
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, as always, thank you for your time, and thank you for the great work you do at Urgent Agenda. And we'll see what happens next week. But as we were saying on the top of the show, I've never seen anything like this, where it seems like every day there's a big story. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be quite a few next Sunday night. I'm sure maybe Bloomberg will say next week he's willing to take Sanders as his vice president.
Well, yes. Or we've been having.
But then AOC would say you can't have two white guys.
That's right. And they or Sanders will say, look, I don't think we have to follow the white man's constitution. I want AOC as my vice president. She's only 12 years old, but 12 years old have a lot of intelligence, and that's what I'm going to do. Let them try to stop me. There's a revolution going on.
Well, Bill, I did not bring this up, but I just want to briefly mention that new numbers came out, or new information came out, about what a great job we're doing here in the United States with emissions. The stuff that the Paris Climate Change Accords was supposed to change, we're doing pretty well without the accord. I would love to know how China is doing, and I would love to know how some of the other countries who criticized or who signed the agreement are doing. They're not doing better than us, and that's amazing.
That's for sure.
Yes. Well, have a great weekend or a great week, Bill, and we look forward to our next time.
Absolutely. We'll have a lot to talk about Sunday night.
That's right. Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, always get together on Sundays, have a good time talking with Bill. And as I was saying, it just seems crazy. you know, following the news, when I do the agenda for the show, I mean, it's like I do it two or three times because it seems like there's so many things, even on Sunday afternoon, things that happen, things that come up that you want to mention during the show. Well, thank you for listening. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.